Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to Checking In with Michelle Williams, a production of iHeartRadio and The Black Effect.
Hello, hello. Hey, I don't know if you heard, but my podcast, Checking In, has been nominated for the NAACP Image Award in the category of Outstanding Lifestyle and Self-Help Podcast. I'm grateful for the nomination. I almost didn't even do a podcast because I was just wondering, there are thousands of podcasts out there, and why is my voice needed? But a nomination from the NAACP lets me know that I made the right choice. And I encourage you to do. Don't worry if there are thousands of something out that you want to do. Nobody has your sauce. So listen, you can still vote. Go to vote.naacpimageawards.net. You have until February 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And please listen to my podcast. We're a part of the Black Effect Podcast Network on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for checking in.
Hey, y'all, it's Michelle Williams. Listen, now y'all know I love supporting my female guests, but I truly love hearing from the men. I've got an amazing guest. He's got an amazing, brilliant, life-giving message to share. And that's right here, next on Checking In with Michelle Williams. I'm so happy that you've joined my podcast. This past year has been so tough on everybody, but also amazing at what so many of us have been able to accomplish, especially for voices of color. My book just came out over a month ago, and the timing was pretty spot on. So many people were talking about mental health and normalizing it. My next guest is also an author with two books. One just came out, and we can't wait to get into it. Okay, I keep saying that. But y'all know what I'm saying. I'm just excited. Here we go. Y'all, I'm so excited, so thrilled to have this amazing, phenomenal guest. Y'all, we have Emmanuel Acho checking in. He was an incredible NFL player, and he is now currently co-host of Fox Sports talk show Speak for Yourself, creator and host of Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. He's also a writer of his recent books, Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man and New York Times bestseller, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Boy. He is now an Emmy winner for Outstanding Sports Personality, Emerging On-Air Talent. Y'all, first of all, if I had a fax, we'd say congratulations and we'd have horns and everybody would be clapping. But y'all, please welcome Emmanuel Acho checking in.
Michelle Williams, it is an honor. It is a pleasure to check in and be checked in on. I have to say, it felt kind of weird as you, one of the women with the most distinguished and accomplished list of accolades, read off my little accolades here and there. I was like, oh,
No, you got more. You have more. you got more. I mean, what I love about you is your faith, your love for family. I know we can read off multiple wins of your life, but to me, you solid in your faith, to me, is the biggest win to me of them all.
Amen and amen. You can say that twice.
Okay.
But yeah.
Because you're bearing fruit. because of your faith. We can get into all of that. But you can go ahead on and talk about me a little bit. You can love on me a little bit. I need to be checked in on.
See, the problem is I don't have the whole bio list.
We don't need it.
But no, it's funny because you and I, we might have wrapped, what, like 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time, because we haven't officially met in person.
We have not, but it feels like it.
Exactly. Due to the glories of social media, there clearly are a lot of downsides, but the glories of social media, we've been able to connect. And I think that's when I instantly told you, like, yo, I had one of your tracks on repeat from a flight from Los Angeles to Connecticut, which is 6 hours. So that is a long time to listen to one song over and over.
And what song was that?
I think it was Fearless. Am I making
really?
That up?
Really? No, Fearless.
Are you in a red dress? Is that, yes. Are you in a red dress in the cup? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think
you
that was single,
know.
Right?
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
I'm like, I think it was that Fearless joint. Yeah, it was a banger. So anyway,
Thank you so much. Did it like help you be fearless and... Was it an affirmation or something you declare?
It was, well, first off, I am a man of melody. And so more than like what it did to me on the surface, it was like the subliminal movement of the music that really just kind of moved me, if you will. And so I think I felt it more than I heard it.
You're in the wrong business. You sound like you should be at A&R. At Epic Records or something. Like, you speaking like a
is A&R audio and recording?
No, it's artists and repertoire. Like, that's that's exactly what an A&R would say. They would present their artist on their roster with a track, and they would say exactly what you just said. You know, I'm a man of melody, and it just was so fluid, and it just moves. You said, you took me back to my days of recording. Like, that's what they would have said to me.
Look, I love, people don't realize, like, people are like, what's your favorite hobby? Playing the piano. I'm like, I just love getting away, and I just love music, and just, like, the relaxation of music. So, yeah, anyway, we can switch professions.
Can you
in
sing?
Another life. Look, I'm not going to answer that question with you asking, okay? Because that's like me asking you, can you play sports? Even if you can, it's a little different. I would sound silly. I would sound so silly answering that. But you can peruse the IG, you know what I'm saying? I got a little song here or there, you know what I mean? A little something, something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, I'm okay with admitting that I don't play sports. That's just not my calling. That's just not my gift. But I will say, and we're gonna, y'all, this ain't even an interview. This is the intro. Listen, during Super Bowl, I would do commentating with Kevin Frazier. Mm-hmm. And so we would go to various Super Bowls. And I used to say, and I don't, y'all, so don't take this the wrong way, because what I'm about to say is not inappropriate. I was about to say, I want to get suited, right? In full gear, football gear.
What it's like to get hit?
Yes! How'd you know?
A lot of people make that request until it actually happens. And then while they're laying in the bed of their doctor's office, they're like, yeah, I don't know if that was such a great decision.
Wait!
You know?
No, but I want to be padded times 10.
Here's the thing. I feel like they could probably just create a simulator where you can experience that level of pain without going through all the work.
Yeah, because someone's saying that level of impact is what is just ridiculous.
Correct. So yeah, be careful what you wish for.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has nothing to do with the conversation that I have prepared for us. So listen, outside of football, you rose to prominence as a best-selling author in 2020 with your book, Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man, that has also become a very popular YouTube series. And thank you so much for doing that. I've watched them. And why did you feel that there was a need to create a platform for these conversations? Because you did it very well. So much clarity, a bridge to much needed conversations and restoration.
Yeah, so for those who don't know me, they'll familiarize themselves with me over the next few minutes. I'm born and raised in Dallas, Texas, but my parents are first generation. I'm first generation American. My parents born and raised in Nigeria. And so, Michelle, I grew up Black, obviously, by skin color, but I realized there's a difference, y'all, between color and culture. You can be Black by skin color, but not necessarily be Black cultured. Now, there are several cultures. Black people is not like one monolith, as we all know. But I went to, Michelle, the number one private school in Texas. Not my opinion. It's truly the number one private school in Texas. Called St. Mark's School of Texas. All boys school. We wore uniform. Gray slacks, white button downs.
I was supposed
to be super nerdy, but I missed the whole intelligence piece with the nerdiness. And so, you know, it was problematic. So I'm immersed in white culture, Michelle, while living in a 6'2", 240-pound Black frame. So I realized there's a disconnect. When I got to college and I was now immersed in Black culture playing football at the University of Texas, I was like, wait a second, something ain't adding up. Because when I was in high school, my white friends would say, I mean, Emmanuel, you're Black, but you're not Black. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel, you're Black, but you don't talk like you're Black. Emmanuel, you're Black, but you don't dress like you're Black. So, Michelle, throughout middle school and high school, I'm wondering, wait, maybe I'm not that Black. I mean, I think I'm Black. I look pretty Black, especially because I'm dark-skinned, but they're telling me I'm not Black, so maybe I'm not Black. I get to college, and I'm like, no, I am Black. My white brothers and sisters were led to believe that to be Black is to be like Nelly circa 2002 without the eye patch.
That's what he wrote in his book, y'all. It's in the book.
And so all that to say, why uncomfortable conversations with a Black man? It's simple. There is a language barrier in our society between Black people and white people. Michelle, go back to middle school, high school, if you will. Any of y'all listening, take yourself back to high school. Mm-hmm. Remember in high school, your foreign language teacher would always say this, your Spanish teacher. Emmanuel, if you want to be fluent in Spanish, you have to immerse yourself in the culture.
It's in the book, y'all. It's in the book. I read it.
Go ahead. Like, it don't matter if you got a Spanish-speaking best friend. It don't matter if you love Spanish music. Are you immersed in Spanish culture? And so, because I was immersed in white culture and immersed in Black culture for middle school and high school white culture, then the rest of my adult life Black culture, I realized, oh, they not talking the same language. Because when you hear Black people say, we're oppressed, systemic racism, police brutality, my white brothers and sisters are like, what you mean, police brutality? I don't see it. When you hear white people say, there's no such thing as white privilege, I lived a hard life. Black people are like, what you mean? How do you think you got that job over me? And we have the same exact resume. And I was like, language barrier. So let me do this, Michelle. I said, I'm going to preemptively answer these questions that I know my white brothers and sisters have, but they either don't have Black friends to ask them to, or they do not have the courage to ask. Enter uncomfortable conversations with a Black man.
With a Black man. Okay, y'all. His father is also a pastor, and I would not be surprised later on down the line if if I get an invitation saying, could you please come lead praise and worship at Emmanuel's pastoral installation? The way he just broke that down, I'm ready to pass the plate. the offering bucket. Y'all, Givelify, Cash App, whatever. When I read that in your book, first of all, my mouth dropped, heart sank, because I'm like, wow. My heart also sank because you mentioned a slight identity issue. You were like, wait, am I Black? Or I remember in high school almost practically getting in a fight because someone said that I talk white. I was like, oh, I didn't know that pronunciation, using my syllables. I just didn't know. I definitely rocked with you on that. I rock with you on so much that you give us. I remember the conversations that you were doing with police officers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say, were you nervous? But it's like I could feel the tension, the nervousness, the uncertainty coming through the screen. Because I don't know if people knew or felt, wait a minute, is Emmanuel finna go off on us? What is this conversation? We entered into the lion's den. That's what I felt. That they felt.
Yo, that was crazy. Again, context, y'all. I sat down in Petaluma, California. It's right outside of Oakland. With their entire, a large majority of their police department. Now remember, Petaluma, California, population of 60,000, less than 1% Black, entire workforce was white. So I'm in a room of 25 white officers. Mind you, this is in the middle of COVID. So everybody had to get COVID tested. And this was, I guess, the most people I had been around in probably 5 months prior. And it's all white people with badges and guns. And I'm sitting there as a Black man in this room. I was nervous. And I would say I was nervous because, like you said, I rose to prominence based off of about three conversations. One I did by myself. The second I did with Matthew McConaughey. And then I sat down with Chip and Joanna Gaines. Next thing you know, Oprah and I are in partnership together on a book. And now a lot of the world, it is crazy, but a large majority of the world knew me. So now I'm sitting down with these officers, but I didn't have a ton of repetitions.
Mm.
And so the first question, though, I had to ask the cops was, when was the last time y'all had a meal with a group of Black people? And their answer, Michelle, was startling because the first officer, there were four on stage, the other 21 were in the audience. The first officer was like, well, Emmanuel, I can't say that I ever have. You know, the next officer said, honestly, I don't think I ever have. To which I brought the attention, that means the first time you may interact with a Black individual in an elongated manner will be when you're apprehending them? I'm like, how do you expect that to go? Like, it can't go well. You set yourself up for failure because proximity breeds care and distance breeds fear. That was the famous quote out of that episode. And that, anyway, I'm not going to hijack this conversation with that, but that was just, it was a lot. It was a lot.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant, life-changing, thought-provoking. And once again, you guys have to get his book, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, to really get into it from one of the quotes that you...
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Yo, I'm hype. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million-dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
So you have to immerse yourself in the culture and to know that there are people that have to come in contact with a lot of Black and brown people who have not immersed themselves in the culture. Because once you do that, you'll know that a Black person's passion, if they're yelling, is not necessarily because they're angry.
Correct.
They just might be excited and they just trying to get their point across. So they raise their voice a little more. I raise my voice a little more. And I'm like, wait. I'm not being aggressive. I'm just excited. Okay. Maybe I do need to bring it down. Like just even in the intro of us talking, we were on 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But that is culture. Now, you also gave us uncomfortable conversations with a Black boy. Now, were these conversations that you wish somebody had with you or conversations that you wish you were able to have with?
Ooh. You know, those two things aren't mutually exclusive.
Okay.
Right? I think those both actually, both those questions stand together. When I, like I told you, when I was often told, Emmanuel, you're Black, but you're not Black. So I was confused. When I put that statement out there, my Hispanic brothers and sisters told me, hey, we were often told you're like a coconut, brown on the outside, white on the inside. I was like, yo, that's wild, because I was obviously told I'm like an Oreo, Black on the outside, white on the inside. So I'm like, I didn't realize that people were going through this in other races and ethnicities. Like the same thing, I had Asian Americans hit me. They were told they were like a banana, yellow on the outside, white on the inside. And I was like, yo, like we all out here suffering at the hands of racially ignorant friends, quote unquote, in our most malleable stages of life.
Yeah.
And so uncomfortable conversations with a Black boy, it is the conversations I wish I would have been able to have when I was 12, 13, 14, It's dialogue I wish my white brothers and sisters would have been able to hear when they were the similar age. Like, remember, Michelle, you can't fix a problem you don't know exists. And I think we collectively as a society need to understand the difference between racist, racially ignorant, and racially insensitive. They are not the same thing, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You have to start to gauge intention. I don't think that these 12-year-olds were racist when they said, Emmanuel, you're not really all that black. I don't even think they could have defined racist. I don't even think they, no, they don't. But they were racially ignorant, because to them, to be black was to talk without enunciating your words. To them, to be black was to wear your pants around your butt and to have three chains around your neck. So I wrote Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Boy to really address and tackle racial ignorance.
Well, we thank you so much, y'all. It is a number one bestseller. Obviously, you're writing this book because of your experiences. Did your relationships with white people change?
That's a really good question. I've never been asked that before. As I was writing the book?
You were writing from experiences, or as writing the book, were you having these conversations as well?
That's crazy. I've probably done 400 interviews in the last year, and I've never been asked that question. I don't know. They didn't change. I think that they were expanded. I think my relationships with my white brothers and sisters were broadened. The beauty of my experience, and I believe that one's experience is their expertise. The beauty of my life thus far, I'm just speaking from experience. So when I'm speaking to my white brothers and sisters, it's only because I've been in them rooms. I've heard these conversations. That's how I know to preemptively answer a question. Well, how come black people can say the N-word, but white people can't? Because I've heard those conversations amongst white people. I've heard conversations amongst white people, but what about black on black crime in Chicago? We're not talking about that, but you want to talk about police brutality. Mm-hmm. I've heard those conversations. So my relationships never changed because they were authentic. And
that's
something
so good.
Authentic I don't think has to change.
Okay. I love that. And I'm glad you said that they expanded or broadened. I guess even me and asking the question, I know I personally definitely was hoping for the latter, for what you just said. It expanded, it broadened, people were enlightened, it brought you together.
Now, white people's relationships with me changed. But see, you asked if my relationship with white people had changed. Very, very, very different. Right?
Because see, now y'all gotta know this man listens. We gonna save that one for relationships, because I might see how you are in arguments, the way you just circled that thing back on around. Okay. All right.
So yes, there was a change in white people's relationships with me, because now white people's relationships with me was much more attentive. Listening, open hearts, open ears. What does he have to say? Why does he have to say it? I was able to, by the grace of God, garner their respect and garner their attention as a result of their respect. So a lot changed from their end to my end, but nothing really changed from my end to their end. I'll end it by saying this. For a lot of white people, you could probably assume that I was one of the few black people they got to know intimately or listen to extensively. But I spend a lot of time with white people. My experience with white people never changed. Their experience with a black man, I'm sure changed, because they probably don't talk to, 240-pound black people on a daily basis about race. I know they don't, because they bought a lot of my books. And the only reason you buy a lot of the books is if you want the knowledge. So their relationship changed, but mine really didn't.
Wow. Profound. And we're so excited that folks bought the book. Congratulations on your Emmy, by the way.
Thank you.
This past year, you took on another TV role and you took over Chris Harrison as host of the popular Bachelor special After the Final Rose. Now, there was a lot of controversy surrounding Harrison's departure, as we know, including racism. What was it like transitioning into this new role?
Yeah, that was by far the hardest thing I've ever done on television. Here is why. The Bachelor, they want to talk about love. They don't want to talk about race, but they need to hear race. And I give this analogy of, y'all remember when you were a child, or those listening who have children of their own, children want to eat the dessert, but they need to eat the veggies. So now you have to, as the parent or as the chef or as both, you have to find a way to prepare the meal that will allow the child to digest the veggies while they expect the dessert, because that's what they really want. So I have to find a way to allow the audience to digest the racial reconciliation and racial intelligence as they anticipate the love, because what they really want is the love. They don't want to hear about race and racial tension.
Yeah.
So it was so difficult, Michelle, trying to weave in and around, okay, I'm going to give you all these love conversations, but what y'all need is this race dialogue.
You have a deep well. Y'all, do y'all understand these gems he's dropping? I have to go back and listen to this conversation to write the stuff down because I can't do it right now. Thank you for that. So you were saying it was difficult to kind of weave that in. What can we expect next time if you're still going to be a part of it?
Man, that's good. Well, at this point, it was kind of a one-off. They asked me to host that after the Final Roast special because Matt James, the first Black Bachelor, he chose a white woman who had racially insensitive photos of her come out. So many people said racist photos. Remember, I'm very particular with my words. I said she had racially insensitive photos appear. And so I was called into action at that point. I don't know what the future holds in regards to me and that show. If I'm called up to bat again, I'll prepare and I will try to deliver what the world needs, not just what the world wants, because not wants should be trumped by needs. But it was just, it was a very volatile moment for one of the highest watched shows. And I just had to be a man in the moment.
Absolutely. In the beginning of our conversation, you gave us a little bit of your background. You told us you were born and raised in Dallas, Texas, to your parents who are Nigerian. Your father is a mental health professional. What exactly? Psychiatrist? Psychologist?
My dad has a PhD in psychology. He's been in private practice for 37 years.
Okay. I'm sure that was a unique experience. Pastor, psychologist, you end up in sports. How has that played a role in your own mental health in later years? Because I know you know as far as sports and mental health, a lot of people, I was just watching The Weight of Gold, or a documentary I believe Michael Phelps has produced or is a part of, and it was talking about athletes and mental health. Do you feel like you were blessed to have a father in the practice, or did it not mean anything? Did you experience anything mental health wise growing up as far as your identity was concerned and from your transition? That's two questions, from the NFL to the role you play now.
It's a catch 22, Michelle, having a father who's a psychologist, because you always feel like you're being psychoanalyzed. And so you're always like trying to give the answer you think he wants to hear, as opposed to just giving the right answer. Because what if he interprets the answer this way or that way?
Or you get judged or assessed based on the actual true answer you give.
Exactly. So it's a catch 22. And also having a dad that's a pastor, because now, you know, your life is just always under a microscope and you're a pastor's kid. And we grew up a part of a mega church, Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship. Obviously, you're familiar with Priscilla.
Yeah,
you know all them. That's my family. So that's the catch 22. Sports is different, though, because in sports, you go through so much mentally. I mean, it was so hard on me as far as I was on the roster, off the roster, part of a team, cut. To put it in layman's terms, I got cut 5 times by the age of 25. I was also traded and also drafted. In normal working terms, I was hired by a job, transferred to another job in another city where I knew no one, and was fired and rehired by that job 5 times before I was 25. That was my NFL career until finally I was like, you know what? I'm good. That does a lot to your psyche, being told you're not good enough, being told you're not fast enough, strong enough. My coach told me, Michelle, and this has stuck with me for life. When I was getting cut, when I was getting fired, to put this in layman's terms, his name was Rick Mentor. I think he was from the South. He said, E, I wish I could buy stock in your future. I was like, bro, what's that even mean? But see, and now I woo. But back then, I was 23 getting released, and I'm like, what do you mean you wish you could buy stock in my future? I'm like, you're firing me from my dream job. And he was like, he told me, I wish I could buy stock in your future. And it's crazy because after uncomfortable conversations, I texted him and I said, Coach, I remember what you said. And he texted me back and said, the stock price is too high. He said, it's too high now. And all that to say, like, yeah, football, it took a toll. It took a toll. But God,
and I don't, as a man, if you would say that it's painful, right? But I love when the old folks say that pain propelled you into purpose. Mm-hmm. I truly, truly believe, and I don't know if purpose evolves or the assignment may change, but purpose remains the same. I'm kind of in that season of figuring that out as well. But I truly, truly believe you are on track, and I agree with the coach. I wish I could have seen you at 23 to look back and then to see you now, right? Because we see you now. I hear people say we know a tree by the fruit it bears, but I believe it was because of seeds sown from childhood to now, how you probably even handled being cut, you know. For people that are listening right now, you've been fired and you're trying to find your way and you're transitioning, but you don't see your future the way somebody else sees your future. Emmanuel, what would you say to someone who doesn't believe that their future is bright or they'll have high stock one day?
Whew. The weight of these words is so monumental, so I just got to take a beat. Right, there are two trains of thought. I don't often like speaking in Christianese because Christianese can be hard for people to translate. So I can give two answers, right? I can give all my words are spiritually motivated. Man, that's so tough. That's such a hard question.
By the way, you got to give an e-course in that because I need an e-course on the Christianese.
Look, man, when you grow up, you know what it is.
I know it all, but sometimes it just come out and it shouldn't.
What would I tell them? I would say that make sure it would be a couple things. It would, regardless, you have to have faith in something, right? You're either having faith in doubt or you're having faith in success, but you're having faith. We assimilate faith with positive attributes. But when I sit down on this chair as you and I are having this conversation, I have faith that it's going to hold me up. So regardless, you're placing your faith somewhere. I would just try to make sure you place your faith in your success, not your faith in your doubt or your faith in your failure.
That's so good. Because either way, like you said, it's faith. I saw something the other day that says, if you believe you can, you're right. If you believe you can't, you're right. So you put your belief somewhere. You put your faith somewhere. Did you have other uncomfortable conversations to yourself about your calling?
Man, that's so good. No, because what's interesting, I was asked a question one time, and I don't really prepare for conversations because I like the heart and the truth to come out.
Yep.
And someone said, Emmanuel, how do you identify your calling? And I said this. I thought, and I was like, wait a second, Michelle. I said, after the first episode of Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, I got a call from a no caller ID number. I picked it up. It was Matthew McConaughey. Acho, McConaughey speaking. I want to have a conversation. Never heard from him before. I said, sure, let's do an episode in 4 days. He said, let's do it tomorrow. McConaughey wants to do it tomorrow. We do it tomorrow. A week later, I get a call from another no caller ID number. I pick it up. Hey, Emmanuel, Oprah Winfrey. I saw your video. I'd love to talk to you. I was like, oh, okay. 2 weeks later, I got a call from another no caller ID number, probably the most powerful person in sports, commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell. Emmanuel, I saw these conversations you've been doing. I say all that to say, your calling will call you. Pick it up.
Come on. Come on. Your calling.
It'll call you. It'll call you. You just got to pick it up. And so in my experience, it literally called me. Matthew McConaughey, Oprah Winfrey, Robert Goodell. My calling called me. I just had to pick it up. Y'all know what it is. No caller ID numbers. We all ignore them. I've gone back to ignoring them, by the way, so nobody try me. But at the time, my calling called me. And so as it pertained to me identifying my calling or running toward, I just had to pick it up. Like after George Floyd was murdered, I said, okay, I got to get in the game. You know what it is, Michelle. I'm sure you got people on your team that you trust. Like, you know what? I'll let my assistant do this. My publicist do this. My stylist do this. But if people start dropping the ball, you're like, you know what? Don't worry about it. I'm doing myself. I'm doing myself. After George Floyd was murdered, I was like, okay, police officers, I thought y'all was supposed to. Okay, but civil rights leaders, I thought y'all was supposed to. Okay, but I mean, my wife, I thought y'all was supposed to. I'm like, you know what? Don't worry about it. I'm doing myself. And that's why I created Uncomfortable Conversations, because I was called to. I didn't have a choice.
But when your calling calls you, I know you say pick it up, but you got to be prepared.
You do. Here's the kicker though. Some things in conversation are assumed, right? Like to go on tour, a part of one of the most famous groups ever, you got to be able to sing. It's a prerequisite. It's a prerequisite to being a part of a group. You got to be able to sing. Yes, you have to be prepared. That's a prerequisite, right? And an ounce of preparation is greater than a pound of cure, which is an aside. But you have to be prepared. And what's crazy for me, I was preparing before I knew it. I was recording videos in front of my camera and doing random videos here, trying to influence society there. And then when the moment came, we were ready.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I love that. To people, there's so much you could do with what we hold in our hands 20 hours a day, this phone. Use the camera. Use it for good. Use it for good and let your voice be out there. A few weeks ago, we saw superstar tennis player Naomi Osaka withdraw from the French Open to protect her mental health. And you spoke out in support of her decision. What message do you think Naomi's decision sends in regards to putting our mental health first, not only in the sports community, but in the Black community as well?
I'll give it to y'all like this, especially those listening that don't fully understand sports, the depths of sports like I do, but I get paid to, so I have no choice. Players and athletes have played in a football game with 15 stitches on their forearm. True story. Thomas Davis, linebacker. He played in the Super Bowl, actually, that you performed at, Super Bowl 50. I believe y'all performed because I was there. Denver Broncos, Carolina Panthers in San Francisco.
Oh, no. If that was what I'm thinking, B performed. Was that with Bruno Mars in them?
You know, I don't remember. I took too many hits to the head.
Stop it!
But look, I say that to say, true story, Thomas Davis, 15 stitches in his arm, he plays in a football game. True story, Terrell Owens, with a broken foot with screws in it, he plays in a football game. So for Naomi Osaka to withdraw herself from one of these four major championships, when we've seen the extent of physical pain that athletes will tolerate in order to play, imagine how much mental pain she must have been going through.
Yes.
That's what people don't get, because you don't see the brain. You don't see the mind. So we're just like, oh, I mean, she's just being a punk, etc. But no. We've seen athletes play through excruciating physical pain. So the fact that she wouldn't or couldn't play through this kind, imagine how deep the pain was. So that was the first thing I wanted to highlight. As for Naomi, I think that it spoke volumes of prioritizing mental health. I think it spoke volumes of we do not yet as a society fully understand it because we cannot see it. And I said this, this is actually an Evans quote, but I'm going to steal an Evans quote and apply it to life. If all you see is what you see, then you do not see all there is to be seen. If all you see is what you see, then you do not see all there is to be seen. If all you see is the physical ailments and whatnot, you don't see it all. And with Naomi Osaka, she was just like, hey, y'all, I got some stuff going on. And if y'all don't want to respect it, that's fine. But I respect myself enough to withdraw.
That's so good. Thank you so much. So we've got Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man, Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Boy. Are we going to see a book? Uncomfortable Conversations in Relationships. This is a safe place. I'm not going to go into anything personal.
That's funny. We probably won't see the book, but we'll probably have the dialogue.
Okay. Right? Like, okay.
The dialogue is necessary. The beautiful part, even like of my life, is as I navigate singleness into my 30s, is being able to have friends you can have real conversations with of the opposite sex, Because what I've realized is oftentimes, like black and white people, we just process things differently. And because we process things differently, there's miscommunication.
Listen.
And I've read this in a book called The Meaning of Marriage, one of the best books I've ever read in my life.
Okay.
It says that primary tension is bred through unmet expectations. And that is just stuck with me. So
unmet expectations because they went unsaid, unspoken.
Correct. And they were unsaid and unspoken. And thus, there was an expectation that wasn't discussed. And then it wasn't met. And tension.
You said rules without relationship create equals rebellion. And I didn't know if that can equate to interpersonal relationships or not.
Here's the kicker though. Yes, I think it's applicable to anywhere. By the way, most of my quotes are Dr. Tony Evans. Listen to his sermons. Because that was also, I think, a Tony Evans paraphrase.
Sheesh. Listen, y'all. I told y'all he has a well. We know where he's getting it from.
I do think that's applicable in most stages of life. You know, when it's said, it's oftentimes said from authoritarian to subordinate, think parent to child. But I also think relationally, when rules are set in place and there isn't a strong enough relationship there, that will lead to rebellion from one to the other. And like any equation, a rebellion without rules, like there's just it all plays itself out. But I do believe that to be true.
That's so good. And last but not least, we are in a crucial, pivotal time in history as it relates to Black Lives Matter and police reform, police brutality. Can you leave us with some calls to actions that we can all do right now so that this doesn't become a trend that dies out? I already know one or two. You got to get uncomfortable conversations with a black man. That's a call to action from me. But from you, my friend.
I say it like this. I spent the last two weekends in Eugene, Oregon. And I was in Eugene, Michelle, because the Olympic trials are going on. The Olympic trials is for those young men and young women that are trying to represent America in track and field.
Yes.
And as you're at any track meet, what you'll notice is that the sprinters, those running short distances, will wear a certain type of spike that is most adequate to run short distances in. And the long distance runners, those running 5 miles or more, 3 miles, they'll wear a certain type of shoe that supports the long distance. My call to action would be to tell everybody to put your distance shoes on, because this is not a sprint, it is a marathon. And like any distance runner, if you were to wear sprint spikes, after a while, your feet would get fatigued and you would have to stop running. But understand that we all are in this for the long haul. This isn't one of those things that's just about optics. This is about outcomes. And so my call to action is really, and I guess this fits this whole conversation of checking in, it's a mental call to action.
Come on.
Because it's prepare yourself for a race that may not have a finish line, but is more about a journey that we travel.
Listen, Emmanuel, I'm so glad we were able to connect. I'm so glad that you were able to check in so that we could have this very important conversation. Thank you so much.
It was an honor, my friend. Truly an honor. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, what we were able to experience just a moment ago has to change your life somehow. It has to inspire you somehow. The brilliance that just checked in with us. He's so passionate and so knowledgeable, but you can tell when a person is really, truly, authentically operating in their purpose, in their assignment here on earth. Now listen, he said your calling will call you, you just have to pick up. So I hope that encourages you guys out there that your calling will call you, you just have to pick up. Now when you pick up, I would add, be prepared, not perfect, but just prepared. Not perfect, but for sure making progress in that craft. making progress in what you decide to study and what you decide to meditate on. Because when we have our phones in our hand, some of our biggest downfalls is how much time we spend on social media. So that's a form of studying, right? So are you going to study someone else's life, someone else's gossip or business, someone else's even downfall? Or are we going to study when the calling calls us? We're not, as the old folks say, hemming and hawing, you know, but we are for sure rooted and ready to go. I'm fired up. Please support Emmanuel, his book, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man and Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Boy. Both of those books are available now. They are New York Times bestseller books. You can catch him on his social media at Instagram. He's somebody that I enjoy following, simply at Emmanuel Acho. And I'm blessed. There are just certain conversations that are going to go down in history of the best conversations on Checking In. And y'all, this is definitely in the Checking In Hall of Fame. So until next time, thank you so much for joining me and checking in. Checking In with Michelle Williams is a production of iHeartRadio and The Black Effect. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic. And at higher risk, get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.